Welcome to Coaching Uncaged, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of the coaching profession with cutting-edge practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Coaching Uncaged brings you pioneering thinking to enrich the art and science of coaching in all its forms. And now, introducing your host, Robert Stevenson.
Hello and welcome to Coaching Uncaged. Today I'm joined with the founder and CEO of Animus Centre for Coaching, Nick Bolton, as we look behind the curtain of Animus. Welcome to the call, Nick.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be here again. Another 3 months on from our last conversation. Looking forward to it.
It's really interesting because, one, it feels like we had this conversation just the other day. So 3 months seem to have sort of zipped by. I'm wondering, how does that feel for you?
How does it feel for me? Well, I think that two things I would say. One is that when we had that conversation last time, it felt like things were a little bit in limbo, like we were beginning to sort of stretch ourselves into new areas and envisage what they could be. And in particular, we were looking at the four missions and really starting to kind of embrace what those four missions were and how we were going to start to meet them. Social impact, the community and events, and so on. And it felt like it was still very embryonic in terms of our thinking around it. And 3 months later, we've actually made some significant moves. And although we can't really point to it and say, there's the outcome, we can definitely point to it and say, there's the process that's unfolded. You know, so we've already brought on board Emma to head up social impact and Kat to head up the community and events. And so things are happening. And then, of course, I really now feel 2021 is going to be the time when you really start to see the impact of that. However, I would also say this, that I think, I don't know if you feel the same way, Rob, but I think that what happened in 2020 at the start, probably for the first time in my whole life, made me realize just how sometimes so out of control you are of your plans. And so, you know, I say what 2021 could look like, but I come at it now with a much greater sense of like, wow, who knows really? Like, you can do your best to plan for it. You can have a very clear strategy for how you're going to implement it. You can, you know, dance in the moment with what shows up. But honestly, it could completely change, couldn't it? And I think it's the first time in my life I've really truly recognized the powerlessness of us in the face of certain forces, be they natural or governmental.
Yeah, it was one of the things that I really thought about a lot, this idea that we are really out of control of what's happening in the world. And as coaches, we often recognize that intellectually, but this was one of the real times that it was a real felt sense of, you know, the world just happens around us and we have to kind of respond or react to it as best we can. We're not really in control of anything.
That's interesting. It's because I think of coaching almost the opposite, but now you've said that, I see where you're coming from. I think of coaching being about you do own your journey and you control what you can control. And coaching is often not too worried about the things you can't control. But I think what this has really brought home is the extent of what happens when there are things that you can't control. And then that's when the positive side of coaching kicks in that says, well, okay, how are you going to respond to it? Because you can kind of like go, oh, woe is me. Or you can figure out what your creative response is. And so it's interesting you've said that. I'd never thought of it in those terms, that coaching is about recognizing what is our limitations, you know, what are our limitations and where are we out of control and being okay with that.
Because one of the, or part of some of the conversations I had with coaches was kind of leaning into how are you going to be okay with not knowing what's going to happen next. You know, some of the coaches I know that had sort of contracts with schools or with organizations that then sort of got terminated, we're sort of going, what do I do now? And I was like, this is really interesting because we're really sitting in that uncertainty and having to face that sort of that existential theme head on, as it were. And often I think we talk about facing it, but it's often at a bit of a distance. And this time has made it really in the forefront of our minds.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really do. I think it's easy to talk about your calmness in the face of difficulty when really the biggest difficulty is, you know, whether the buy from Waitrose or M&S or something. And it's when you're suddenly going, oh my goodness, I'm completely out of control with this. I mean, I think one of the things that's really come across this year for me, Rob, is, and it related to what we're talking about, is the extent to which when government speaks or when authority speaks, you really are pretty powerless. You can definitely do things. You can protest and you can, or you can agree with them. But broadly speaking, they have the final say. And it's really fascinating the extent to which, you know, you have to just kind of bow down before the force of like, because this, what's interesting is how the society coalesces around that too. Like, I'm not even sure how much people really fully think through what's in front of them. They're just going like, well, that's where we're going, so I need to go there. And I totally get it, but it's just really fascinating to me this year how easy it is to slip into that. I remember watching, Handmaid's Tale with my wife, Danny, and we were like saying, goodness, you can imagine it's only one step away from that in any society at any point, really. You know,
it's really interesting how many sort of people came out against what was happening and spoke about this idea that the government were up to something.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to rebel against what they were up to because there were these secret plans, conspiracies, at foot, that's the word. And sort of seeing some people really push against that and then seeing other people just kind of go, well, I'm just going to do what they tell me to do and that's it.
And I had my own mixed relationship with that because part of me was like, why aren't you wearing a face mask? You know, we're meant to be wearing a face mask. Why aren't you wearing a face mask? And then another part of me was like, I respect you because you're standing up for what you believe. But I was interested in my own reaction, which was kind of a lot of compliance on my part. You know, I wasn't the rebel I thought I might be in this kind of situation. I was actually pretty compliant and happy to go along with things because it meant at least I knew roughly what I was contending with. So yeah, I had mixed feelings towards that whole kind of standing up against authority, which was kind of weird for me, I thought.
One of the things that I think really that this also brought about was this sense of you know, what your community was and where communities were. So, you know, where I live, it's kind of a mini estate, I suppose, a couple of sort of small high rises and people sort of looking out for each other and checking in and how are people doing, and then seeing that sort of spill over into the Animus community as well. And it really brought home that sense of we do live in these sort of community bubbles and how, you know, when they come together, that's really interesting. And then also noticing when they start to slip away and not exist and kind of go, do we only come together under challenge? Or do we have to work harder to not come together under challenge? So when things are okay, it's like we have to work harder to keep the community going.
Yeah.
When there's an issue, the community coalesces around that issue.
Yeah. Perhaps I can selfishly bring it back to Animus in that case and ask you, as the kind of the shepherd of the system, what's your sense of how, because obviously the team have had to work together very hard this year to survive this period, and they've done it incredibly well, but how do we continue to keep that connection throughout the team?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because one of the things I've sort of begun to put in place for next year for the teams is more moments of connection. So as a leadership team, in the olden days when we met together physically, we would have a monthly let's gather together and talk about what we're doing. And I've pushed that into the wider teams now, so that we all get together. So the trainers, the freelancers, the operations team, and on a monthly basis, we'll just kind of check in on how people are doing, what's the latest thing that's coming through the system. So we also create more of a communication piece. And then with the sort of the leadership team, keep a sort of a weekly check-in that's just about, so how are we? Yes, we've got our numbers and our targets and all of that stuff, but just to kind of, what's the emotional temperature of what's going on? What support do people need, and how do we lean into that? So almost to rebuild that sort of family unit, or to keep that family unit going, having really come together during a challenging time and saying, let's keep that togetherness alive for us and actually actively work on enabling that to happen, as opposed to when things get a bit easy, we sort of relax away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. And how have you found it, Rob, as the guy at the head of it all? What's the year been like for you?
It's been tough. There's been an emotional toughness to it, and a mental toughness, because you're sort of recognizing within the team, you know, family members being ill, in some cases passing away, and recognizing, you know, how do we support them to either take the time off or come in when they need to, and keeping a positive energy. Whilst I'm not all about, you know, let's just be happy for the sake of it, but recognizing that you need to keep an energy moving forward. We can't just stop. I mean, we could just stop, and there were other sort of organizations around me that just stopped, that just went, this is happening, I'm just going to stop. And I was very much like, well, no, let's keep moving forward. But it takes an emotional energy and a physical energy to kind of keep that going on. So I noticed within myself moments of tiredness, but it also created boundaries for me. So I got much better at going, right, it's the end of the day, I'm going to close my laptop, I'm going to turn off my phone, and I'm going to chill out and just relax, as opposed to what I was doing before, which was, well, it will be on in the corner and I'll checking on things and I'll work a little later. It made me go, I need to work on having my own energy so I can support the team with their energy. And also I've got to be an example. It's like, I can't say don't work late and then work late. And one of the conversations I had with the team was, it's great that you're working hard, but there will be times when I need you to really push. So you need to take your downtime. You need to take your holidays. So you've got that energy available when we really need it to kind of to shift a gear.
Yeah.
But yeah, I found it sort of tough. But what I really loved about it is that we do have such a great team that have come together and supported each other. So no one's been sort of left straggling behind. People have gone, okay, how can we help you? What can we take from you? What can we change in the system so that you're not completely knackered trying to keep up with everything?
It feels like it's been in a weird way, kind of a good, like sort of crucible for you to really develop as a leader, which, you know, you wouldn't ask for it, but now it's there. It feels like that's what it's done for you.
Yeah, because it's not only leading the team, it's leading the communities, and the community have had their own needs. And one of the things we noticed was sort of the first round of lockdown, as it were, people kind of rallied around, were happy to try new things and work in different ways. But by the second time, people's energy to do that was less. And so there was much more leaning into the community, looking at how we support the community. And, you know, bringing Kat in as community manager really helped with that. You know, one of the simple and effective things that she did was just have a coffee break. So she just created this coffee break that happens two or three times a week where anybody can just come along and join for 20 minutes, half an hour, and just have a chat about what's going on for them. And that was something that was really useful.
Yeah, it's really good to hear. And I'm glad that Kat's come on board to do that, because one of our, you know, as you know, the mission two was around how do we create a self-sustaining community. And it feels like that was a really critical move to bring Kat on. So it's really lovely to hear how, I mean, that's early days as well. It's like, you know, the coffee meeting is just the first of many great things to come, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. So we're already talking about summer schools. We kind of revisited the idea of Animus Adventures, Animus Exchanges. We've got various conversations going on right now about what are the summits that we're going to have next year. So she's really running with it. And what's been brilliant as well is because the team have had to connect with each other, they've found new ways of working. So our community manager, Kat, our head of coach development, Crystal, we started working together as Crystal's been interviewing trainers to go, well, these trainers, they're not quite right for our main course, but they've got this about them that might be useful. So then Kat jumps in and goes, okay, maybe we'll create a short course, or maybe we'll create a lecture series around what you do. So they've started sort of the sort of integration of ways of working, which is really exciting. I had a chat with Crystal today as part of one of our one-to-ones as we end the year. And she's got great ideas about what we can do with YouTube and what we can do with Facebook Live. And I was like, this is interesting because they're not quite in your wheelhouse, but these are great ideas. So how do we get you to own them, to move them forward without slipping too far away from your day-to-day, as it were?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And actually, out of interest, given that now everyone is virtual and they're all working from their homes and so on, how are you or how are they creating the space to have that level of collaboration and so on?
So we have our weekly meetings, and part of the weekly is to talk about what is it you're doing, so who might you need to connect with in order to do that thing. So people will jump on connection calls around that. But we also have internal coffee breaks. So one of the things we have on a Wednesday afternoon is just a half an hour slot where anybody can join from the team and just have a chit chat. And we also sort of push this idea of, well, if you're on a coffee break at home, then let everybody know. And if anybody's free, they can do that. So we're looking at how do we recreate those water cooler moments when we don't have a water cooler to stand around?
Yeah, that's really nice. That's really nice. Great.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about our cat being new into the system. We've also got Emma, who's part of our social impact. And we can see that it's early days for her, but already noticing that energy that the community have around this idea of what can we come together to do, to change, to create. What's your thoughts around that?
Well, I really love what Emma's doing. I mean, obviously I'm less involved than you are, Rob, so you're seeing far more of what's going on. But we have our monthly meeting where I just get a sense of what's happening in the social impact space. I think Emma's doing an amazing job. I can, you know, the quality she's bringing to it and the vision. And I love the fact she's got her first initiative being launched in the education field. So really, really great. I can't wait to see where that lands in, say, 5 years. Because it's like one thing to be now, it's another thing to be June 2021. But I think we'll really start to go like, wow, did we do that in 5 years' time when we've reshaped whole paradigms around coaching? When, you know what I mean? I think it's hard to imagine where this is going to go, but I think it's going to go somewhere really, really special. And that's what's going to be exciting.
Yeah, when I sort of have my weeklies with Emma and hear who she's talking to and the connections that she's making and then the connections that they're then making, I go, wow, at some point, this is going to really click. There's going to be a moment where it becomes a real driving force because she's just making these connections, having these amazing conversations about possibilities. And I think, as well, right now we're in that possibility phase. Anything's possible. So let's just keep having these conversations and then see where they start to take us and how do we inch forward with them.
Yeah, precisely. I was thinking, like, when I was looking at the Animas system and how significant it's got as an organization, and yet in 2008 I couldn't have dreamt that that's what it's going to look like. And I think, you know, in a way, the social impact arm is at that point where you've got one person who is the person that's kind of taken the steps forward and bringing in other people, but it's really on the shoulders of one person. But when you think where it could be in 5 years, 10 years, it could be as significant as the Animas training part of Animas. You just don't know. And I think that's what's really exciting, because I feel it, at sort of a cellular level, I feel that social impact is a huge part of what we are going to stand for in the future. And what it's going to look like at a sort of pragmatic, mechanical level, I don't know. But I just feel like it's going to be really big. And then Emma's going to lead us towards that, like a sort of a Moses of social impact.
And you know, she really owns that space and is passionate about that space in driving it forward, which, you know, all of our team are passionate about what they do. But you can really feel that from Emma in what she talks about. Yeah. And she's already in that phase of going, right, I'm going to need a team soon because this is growing so quickly around me. I'm the person driving it forward. But at the moment, she's the one doing most of the doing. And you can see that very soon that's just going to start to grow and expand around her.
Oh, that's really interesting and good to hear. Because ultimately, it's that leverage of using other people that takes things. Like, I would say what held Animas back, you know, for quite a few years was my timidity around recruitment, because, you know, there's always a cash flow issue when you first start a business, and it's a little bit scary to go, I'm going to take on a full-time employee when you know you can do it yourself and not have to spend that money. But in truth, that holds you back. And most business owners know that the moment they start building a team is when they really start moving forward fast. But you've got cash flow issues in the early days of business. Well, we don't have those issues anymore. So it means that we can start to help Emma move forward faster, which is great.
Yeah, and it sort of makes me think about how each department becomes its own mini business in a way, and we start to look at, so how do we support those mini businesses, but also how do they support themselves as well, and what else might they create that becomes an offer that helps to bring in, you know, a revenue for that mini part of the business?
Yeah, a revenue or some kind of benefit. You know, it could be a brand building benefit that isn't directly attributable to revenue, but you can definitely say, wow, that's really put our name out there. Actually, I was talking to somebody recently, and he was sharing with me that when he had his own business, he took what he called a $250,000 gamble, because he had an idea to create a research part of his business. And he said, right, I'm going to take this $250,000 and that's the seed fund for it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That's my $250,000 gamble. And he said it did work out. But I was interested in that idea of going, here's a chunk of money that I dedicate to this thing, which is kind of, what's the word? They sort of walled. I can't remember. There's a phrase, isn't there? But like sort of walled from the rest of the business.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that idea of saying, well, where does that need to happen within Animas? That means we commit resources and time to it.
That's interesting, because we were talking the other day with Ruth, who is our operations manager, and she's beginning to grow into a new space. And we've been saying to her, right, you've got this chunk of money to help you to grow into that space, to make that really happen in terms of the student experience. And it becomes really exciting as we start to go, okay, where can we do that? Where can we ring fence pockets of money for departments or teams or ideas and go, right, let's see where that goes. And if it works, brilliant, we'll keep going there. But if it doesn't work, we're okay to let it go. And I'm aware that we can't do that with everything, because then there's no money left in the business. But the idea of, you know, what's going to be a gamble this year, and then what might be gamble within another 2 years' time, and see where those things take us. It's a little bit like the idea of Wellspring that you've spoken about, in terms of, you know, developing new courses, but not just us creating courses, the trainers themselves coming up with ideas and bringing them, and us going, right, what might we do with that?
Yeah. So Wellspring, just for those listening who haven't heard about it, is kind of a concept to, in a way, democratize the course creation process. I suppose that's a way of thinking about it. Because one of the things I recognize, and I know you do too, Rob, is there's just such a wealth of experience and knowledge and skills and niched kind of areas of expertise and all sorts of stuff, that if we were to try to kind of own it all and say, right, we want to create this particular course and we're going to create it and own it, it just limits our ability to kind of expand our horizons. And at the same time, it disempowers the people who have that knowledge to step forward and say, I can do this. And so Wellspring is really, it's still an embryonic kind of concept, but it's an idea to enable people who feel like they've got something to give to the coaching community to create courses that they run in tandem with us. So we've become the organization that kind of fills the proverbial room, but they become the experts. And instead of us having to own the intellectual property, the IP of that course, they continue to own it. They can take it elsewhere, train elsewhere with it. But for the time they have a relationship with us with that course, we have a partnership. And I think that's a really, really nice idea, because it just kind of opens the floodgates of possibility.
Yeah, I really think so. Because there's so many ideas that training teams have. You know, when I was part of sort of heading up the training team, they would have ideas about, you know, we could do this, we could do that. But they didn't have the freedom just to go and make it. And likewise, when they thought about doing that on their own, they were like, but how do I do the marketing? And how do I do this? And how do I do that? So they were like, actually, then I won't bother. Whereas now there's this opportunity to go, right, they've got the idea, they've got the expertise, and we can support the other elements of that to make it happen.
Yeah. And it's interesting where it came from, because actually it was through conversation with a trainer who'd run a course for us. And we were looking at running it again. And it was like, well, if I was starting a new school, I was starting the corporate coach school. And it was like, well, if you run it and then you disappear, because for whatever reason, you decide you don't want to run it anymore, my school has no product. It's an unsustainable thing. And so, and in the nicest possible sense, we were just having a discussion about where does the IP sit, such that I can feel safe in my business, but you also feel valued for what it is you bring. And then it was just one of those moments of epiphany where you suddenly realize, hold on a sec, am I just thinking in an old school way? Like, am I just thinking like a 20th century person that's about ownership and sustainability and, you know, what happens if ... And so I just went, what if I gave up that need to have that kind of control or that ownership and just said, well, while you're here, you're here. And when you're not here, you're not here. But I need to create an abundance of opportunity within that school so that it's not reliant on any one course or any one trainer. It just becomes what I described as a clearinghouse for those who wanted to deliver expertise in corporate coaching. And then it was like, hold on a sec, couldn't we do that for youth coaching and for life coaching and for relationship coaching? And oh my goodness, this makes life somewhat easier. So once you kind of give up on some of the notions that you think make a business, it suddenly becomes kind of freeing, which is interesting.
And I sort of, as you say that, I wonder if it's then created any other epiphanies or openings in other elements or parts of the business.
Oh, in what sense, Rob? Like, I can't immediately think of one. Did you have something?
Yeah, it's just that, you know, sometimes when we have a new idea about something, it then makes us go, wait, where else can I apply that idea? So where else? I'm just thinking, and I don't have an answer, but I'm just kind of going, well, where else might we be holding on to old thinking?
I see.
You know, whether that be with marketing or our social media. Because, you know, one of the things that we shifted was our podcast. You know, in the olden days, we would hire a studio, we'd go in, we'd film a couple of episodes, and then they would come out over time, and that was it. And then when we came into this new way of being, we're like, well, everybody's doing it like this, so we can do it like this too. And it just kind of really opened up an avenue for us to do our podcast, to the point where we brought Joe in, who now is our outreach person, bringing in new guests to the podcast, but also creating opportunities for me to guest on other people's podcasts. And it was just that by shifting how we thought about producing the podcast, it completely shifted our thinking in that. And I'm just kind of going, where else might we shift our thinking or let go of an idea to create something new?
Well, that's a great question. And actually, I can think of an example now that I've kind of had time to reflect. But it's a great question to hold at a meta level to apply to everything. But where we definitely have done that, or where we're doing it, is the writing teams. And so if you think about us, when it comes to the Animas blog, typically it's been us writing it. It started off as me writing it all the years ago, and then bit by bit, you know, we brought on other people, and then Sam became the main content writer. But in truth, it's so limiting to think you've got to rely on one person or a set group of people. And so what we're saying now is, hold on, who would like to write for Animas? And there has to be a threshold of you know, authorial competence, let's say. But beyond that, it's like, okay, well, let's say we know we need to have a structure of, like, there's a core base of content that needs to be managed, and then there's like research pieces, and then there's book review pieces, and then there's reflective pieces. Great, that becomes our framework for going, that's what an Animas blog looks like, whether it's for the corporate coach, the youth coach, the relationship coach, the group coach. And that's also incredibly liberating. Now, it doesn't come without its challenges. Like, logistically, it's like, blimey, we've got 80 people who want to write for us. How do we go through the process of saying, are they decent enough writers? And that's a horrible process in itself, because it's kind of, you're having to make a judgment call, which is never nice. And B, how do we then go, we've got this article, who would like to write it? And then assigning it. So there are logistical challenges, but the underlying principle of kind of how do we break down the silos of thinking and operations is really great. And I think the more we can do that, the better across the business.
Yeah, it reminds me of part of the conversation I was having with Crystal around our YouTube channel. And she was saying it would be great for people to have, you know, 2-3 minute videos just talking about life after training and what are they doing now and what's that about. And I was like, that's really interesting, because we often, you know, reach out for testimonials and things, but we never say to the community, hey, if you want to let us know what you're up to, why don't you shoot a small video and we're going to share it to the world. It needs to have these things in it, and these are the kind of parameters around what you can put in it, and then offer it out to people to then create for themselves and bring. And I think that also creates a level of creativity for people.
Yes.
because it'd be really interesting to see who does it in their studio, who does it in front of their bookshelf, but who does it out in the park or on the beach or wherever. And then that's really exciting.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it makes you realize that there are shifts that happen in society due to technology, which slowly permeates so many aspects. And I was just thinking, because as you were describing that, I'm thinking, well, that's classic crowdsourcing, isn't it? And of course, crowdsourcing started off as a financial thing. Hey, I need to raise £100,000, but I can't go to a bank. So how do I crowdsource this? And I'm thinking, so really what we're talking about now is crowdsourcing content and crowdsourcing the inspirational part of Animas that says, hey, you know, you should consider coaching as a career or as a next, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I'd never put that term to it, but now there's a term to it. I go, okay, now we can really run with it because we understand what it is that's kind of coming to mind.
The irony is, Rob, and I'm sorry to do this to you because I'm obsessed by AppSumo, as you know, but we've even got the software ready for it because I bought a piece of software some months ago, which is exactly that. People can do a video which uploads straight to your platform. So it's ready to go.
We've got it. That's brilliant. That's great. Because I was saying, you know, we have to find a way to make it happen. And where do they put the video? Where do they send it? Well, actually, we've got the material. It's already there.
Got it. Yeah. So how are you feeling about 2021? What are we? December the 19th today? We're on the cusp of the new year. And it's ironic because you kind of think, well, December 19th last year, we thought we're going to be opening physical manifestations of Animas, and you know, all of our plans just went poof into dust all of a sudden in February. But how are you feeling about 2021 now?
So there's a real kind of excitement. It feels like there was a moment where we were going through a slog and just trying to get through and survive, and then we got to a point where it's like, okay, so now we know we can do this. We can start to thrive again. You know, we've kind of made it happen, made it work, put our systems and processes in place, and everything's kind of working. Right, what's our thrive point, as it were? And I'm really kind of going, yeah. I feel like the idea of new courses is really exciting and what that looks like. We've got some that are, you know, almost ready to go, and we've got others that are just ideas. And it's like, okay, that's going to be really interesting seeing where they take us to and what that then does in terms of the shape of the school, because our diploma has been the bedrock of who we are for such a long time. And it's going to be really interesting when that just becomes part of who we are as opposed to who we are. And I'm really excited about where that takes us. And as the teams grow, there's something about not just growing for the sake of it. I was reading a book called Multipliers, and it was talking about this idea of how can you get the most out of your teams? How do you enable them to be the genius as opposed to being the genius telling them what to do, allowing them to create what they want to do? And that concept has really made me go, okay, how do we really give permission across the organization for people to have ideas and then run with those ideas to create new, whether it's new courses or completely new directions for the organization and see where that takes us. Yes, we still need to do the kind of the nuts and bolts of running the organization, but it's almost like the idea of how can we free up pockets of time or energy to allow people to really lean into what excites them and for them to then create something new or different.
We actually spoke about this some years ago. I don't know if you recall, but we came across that Google idea, which was, you know, Google give, I think it's 20% of an employee's time to do whatever else they want to work on. And some of the most significant products of the 21st century have come from that, like Gmail was somebody's side product. You know, it's incredible, really. And we talked about that. But again, it was at a phase when really we weren't strong enough as a business to go like, yeah, you can spend some time doing some random thing that we don't know will work. But I think we've got to a point now where it does feel like may not be 20%, but certainly you could definitely say there's a certain period of time that you could devote to something that feels left field and we don't know if it's going to work, but we're prepared to give it a shot. And, you know, I think, you know, one of my passions has always been precisely this. It's like, how do I get you guys to to run with your own ideas and to start to, because I love to look at Animas and go, wow, I didn't know that was happening. That's when I feel most happy, when I look at Animas and go, ah, I didn't know that was happening. That's really cool. And I had no idea. That's great for me. I love that, because I don't particularly want to be the one that's always in charge or coming up with ideas or, and so it's really great to see this happening now. And I'd love to see that, you know, taken off in all directions.
And as you say that, it makes me sort of go, it's interesting how these things take time to kind of embed, because, you know, for a long time you'd say, go, you know, try it, go see, you know, tell me what you want to do. Don't wait for me to give you an idea. And it's taken a while for me to be able to hold on to that, so I can then get the team to hold on to that. And it's just interesting that trickle down. Mm. And it makes me think about, you know, what needs to happen to accelerate that, to really get people to not buy into it in a sense of agree to it, but really go, oh, you mean this? You mean I can try something out? You mean I can come to you with an idea for something, a proposal for something, and you'll actually pay attention to it?
Yeah, exactly. Because people carry around the residue of years of working for other people, don't they? Or whatever their experience is. I mean, it's, you know, the Filipino team is a classic example where they've had to really let go of some of their hierarchical ways of thinking, you know, and so often when somebody joins us from the Philippines, they're incredibly polite and it's sir this, and it's like, no, you don't call me sir. And it takes a while for them to be like, really, I can call you Nick or I can call you Rob. And then they realize, oh, this is genuine. And sometimes, you know, I remember with some of the guys from the Philippines saying like they've never ever been complimented by their boss or never thanked by their boss. And it's a real culture shock. But it's no different from the UK. It may be a different level. But we've all been brought up in a certain way of thinking, yeah, I have to wait for, you know, permission or direction or whatever it might be. And it takes a while to kind of shred those shells in a way.
Yeah, and it sort of means that I have this really interesting role that it's about inspiring the team to try new things whilst managing the team to do the things they need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this kind of this balance that I have to dance, where it's like, I love that you've had a million ideas and you're trying all these things, but have you done the thing that you need to do? Because if you haven't, then that creates a hole somewhere in the system that somebody else needs to deal with. So it's really interesting doing that dance, but the more open we can be about what that dance is and the fact that that exists, the more the team can be receptive and open to when I go, actually, don't start that yet. Go finish this first. They don't go, oh, he's being mean and he's shutting me down. They go, oh, actually, that's the role. That is his role. That's what he needs to do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, ultimately, a business works when the core stuff is being done. And if you take your eye off that stuff, all of a sudden the luxuries can't be done either. And then you're kind of stuffed in all directions. So it's always really, really important to make sure the core is being done. But it's almost like, you know, the way you've been talking about a dance, and I kind of have this in my head, you know, Animas, the core of Animas is like a waltz taking place in the ballroom. But over in that little room, there's Lindy Hop taking place, and there's times when you can go and do Lindy Hop, you know?
yeah. And it's that kind of... It reminds me of the metronome of things. It's like these things have to happen, and these are the times that they have to happen. Yeah. And then you find the spaces in between these things happening to then try out new things and different things. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of making sure that everybody is aware of what's their metronome, what's the thing that they have to do, and when is it needed, so they can then find the spaces to do all the other things that they might want to do or follow those sort of interests. And part of that comes from learning culture. So one of the things that we've started to do this year and we're really ramping up next year is, you know, creating a culture of learning.
Yeah.
So making sure that people are actually taking the time to do learning and understanding. And as we've brought in more sort of, I was going to say professional personnel, I kind of mean that, but I kind of don't mean that.
People with the background in their field.
Yeah, and they have systems that they use. Mm. And so now what we're doing is on a monthly basis, we have a learning lab where those people teach the rest of us that system. And now we might take it on, or we might not, but it's just kind of going, how can we spread the learning around? And that's happening in the kind of the leadership team, but that's also happening within the training team. So all of the trainers, once a month, somebody will run a class about a speciality that they have for the other trainers to kind of learn about, take on, whatever that might be. And then it's like, let's really push this culture of learning through the system.
Yeah, I love that. Because, you know, I've been an advocate of that for a long time. And one of my kind of challenges to you guys was always like, imagine you're going to be interviewed by Jeremy Paxman on your, you know, on your job. And, you know, how well prepared would you be for the interview? And how could you be the absolute best? So it's really great to hear that's really coming into play in a big way.
Yeah, and because part of it is also looking at how do you get your best? Because a lot of us think that we need to read books in an academic manner in order to get there. And we sort of forget the resources that are available in terms of, you know, audiobooks, podcasts, blinks, YouTube. There's so much out there. Mm. If you just go, I'm going to spend 20 minutes a day tapping into one of those veins, how quickly your level of knowledge and idea start to kind of build up. And I think this is what we've seen with Ruth this year. You know, she's really lent into this idea of how do I become a learner? And from that, she's just having these new ideas and connecting the business in different ways because of that sort of information swell, that knowledge swell that she's gaining.
Yeah, I love that. I think we live in an astounding world now. You know, despite the challenges, that our ability to learn what we need to learn with a click of a finger, in a sense, is absolutely phenomenal. And I think it's just such a rich environment. But I also think that what you've described around bringing the professionals in inverted commas, is also important, because one of the things I think we tried to do for a long time is build Animas with people we liked, who were like us, and who we got to know through Animas because they trained with us, but they weren't really experts in their field. And I think what you've done really well over the last 6 months is start to go, well, let's actually bring in people who've got backgrounds in that, whether it's Crystal from L&D or whether it's Emma from Social Impact. And you're really, my sense is you're really beginning to see that difference.
Yeah, it's been really interesting sort of struggling, it's maybe a strong word, but, you know, wrestling with a system that somebody doesn't really know how to work, and then bringing in somebody who gets how to do it and how quickly they set things up and it's up and running. And you suddenly go, wait a minute. Okay, this is what we need. We need somebody who knows how to do this. So they come in, they get it done, but they also tell us what needs to be done. And now I've got a team where they're coming to me and going, this is what we need to do next in order to get to here. And I'm going, okay, great. You need to connect with that person, or we need to wait until this time in order to do that. Let's get a whole team meeting together to sort of get a road plan in place for that. And then we'll run with it. Whereas before, you or I were going, right, this is what we need to do, and this is when we're going to do it, and this is how we're going to do it. So we were the energy givers.
Yeah.
But now it's becoming a self-energizing system, as it were.
Nice. Proper, in a sense, a proper holacracy.
Yeah. And what's interesting, as that comes about, I notice my own walls coming up and going, no, stay doing what you do. And they're going, well, actually, no, you can come out of that space and blend into these other spaces as well, as long as we understand how we're doing that and we recognize how the ebb and flows work, so somebody doesn't all of a sudden become overwhelmed with the amount of work that we're passing their way because we're all having these ideas.
Yeah. Great. I mean, like I said, there's one thing I'd love to ask you, Rob, regarding next year is what do you see as the, you know, with all of this in place now, and I feel like you've done an amazing job of putting together a really great team and focusing them on A, surviving and thriving in this year, but also looking ahead. What do you see as the major milestones next year?
The major milestones next year. So, I mean, one of them's in our sort of plans, which is to start delivering our training in the US.
Yeah.
And I really feel that, for want of a better phrase, it's like we start to play with the big boys when we start to do that. Yeah. And apologies if that phrase offends anybody. It's not meant in an offensive way, but it feels like we're stepping into a different level. It's like we're getting into a different league. And, you know, for a long time, I thought of Animus as the corner shop, and now we're the department store, but we're growing beyond that now. So I think that the working in the US is going to be part of that. And I think that what then comes from that is this sort of global organization. You know, we're global in the sense that people from around the world train with us, but we're not global in the sense that we have houses in those spaces. We have not necessarily an office, but a presence in those spaces. And I think that next year, that what we'll start to see is our presence in a really global way. And where Animus is one of the, when you think about coaching, you think about this kind of work, you go, oh, Animus is that. That's what Animus does. And I think if you're in the UK, you might think that, but if you're in other parts of the world, you wouldn't necessarily think of us.
Yeah.
I think the other milestone is how we work with the sort of the governing bodies of coaching. And how we really sit alongside them in the work that we do. For a long time, we've kind of connected with them and kind of got to know them, but never really in a way where they come to us and they have conversations with us about what they're doing. And what I've begun to notice this year is that happening. I've begun to notice that we're kind of noticeable enough where people go, okay, so you're doing that. Let's have a conversation about what that might look like if we were to work together on that. Or why don't you let us know when you do your diversity and inclusion summit? We'd love to be involved in some way. And that's what I'm beginning to notice that. So it feels like our next step is to really push, or not push, but lean into working with those organizations.
Interesting. And you mentioned the Diversity and Inclusion Summit. That sounds interesting. Is it, do you see like a kind of a range of different summits that tackle different areas next year?
Yeah. So I think that when we did the Social Inclusion Summit, it really opened my eyes to the wealth of knowledge that we have within the community and how we can tap into that knowledge and give them a platform to share what they know. And as we've sort of been looking at diversity and inclusion within the organization and with the community, the amounts of sort of conversations and experts that have surfaced from that, I've gone, okay, we need to give them a voice. So let's do that. And then as Kat's come on board, she's going, oh yeah, but we could do a summit about this, and we can do this over here. And, you know, Emma's like, I want to do my next social impact summit. What's that going to look like? And then as we start to think about the different sister schools, as they sort of move closer into Animus, it's like, okay, well, we can do a corporate coach summit.
Yeah.
And we can do a group works summit. And I start to go, wait a minute, we can really lean this in to what we do. And it can be part of the Animus system that, you know, people know that every quarter there's a big event happening that they can be part of. And that we can invite people to speak on, but we can also use our community to share their own wisdom on as well.
Yeah, I love that. Again, come back to the crowdsourcing idea. We don't hold all the wisdom. The wisdom's out there, and it's how we facilitate that.
And I think that part of our evolution within all of this as well will be how we support coaches within their business as well, because we've been great at training them. And we've done a bit of support around, well, how do you build your business? But I feel like now is the time to lean into that. Now's the time to be able to say, okay, when you come to us, you get the coaching skills that you need. But here are business skills, and here are development skills, and here are marketing skills, or whatever those things might be. So somebody can go, oh, wait, I can go here and I can spend the rest of my coaching life here growing, because they just feed me with all these different schools or courses or ways of thinking. And I find that really exciting.
That, you know, kind of like a Willy Wonka's Coach Factory.
Yeah. And I think what's one of the things that we're so lucky about with the way that we train coaches is that we don't create coaches that all work exactly the same way.
Yeah.
So by carrying that ethos into all the other things we do, we know that we're not going to say, you have to do this to have a successful business. We're going to go, here are all the things that you might do. Now let's help you to work out what you will do to make that work for you. And how do we support you to make that business work? And what's just come to mind actually is where we've got that, the social impact incubators, where we're helping people create their social impacts. We might also have a business incubator where we help people sort of incubate and birth their businesses into the world.
That's kind of my idea, in the sense of that's how I see this working, is that we'd have a kind of, because I agree with you, we don't want to go, this is how to grow a coaching practice, but we do want to create support structures that enable people to focus their time for that hour or that day or that whatever it might be. And we do that through a process of incubators, and that could be really exciting.
Yeah. Now my mind's worrying about what do we do next? And as always, it's like, we can have a million ideas, but it's making those ideas happen. And I think now that we've got that bigger team, that's what's helping us to create this stuff. Because I have an idea, or somebody has an idea, and we go, right, so who are the right people to come together to make that happen, and who's going to own it? And I think for a long time, you spoke about somebody needs to own it to drive it forward. Mm. Otherwise, it doesn't get done. It's just an idea that floats around, and I really feel that we've got the hang of that. I don't think we've got it nailed, but we're getting the hang of, right, so who owns this that drives that thing forward, that becomes accountable for it happening? And when it doesn't happen, it's not about a punishment. It's about, okay, what needs to happen in order for this to happen? Let's come back to that question and use pool our knowledge, crowdsource our knowledge to enable it to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I came to that kind of realization years ago when I ran my conferences on social policy issues, and I would find that there would be some project that was set up by somebody, and the fact that they set it up and they championed it, they'd often talk about the champion of this thing. But as soon as that person left, the project would collapse because there wasn't somebody who owned it. And I started to think, wow, like whenever you want to do anything new, somebody's got to really own it, and they've got to carve out time. Because the other risk is you say you own it, but by the way, get the rest of your job done. And then I'm like, oh, hold on, that'll wait, because I've got to do this thing here. And I think it's so important that we know where we're trying to get to, and then who's going to own that particular strand. Hence why we brought Emma on, because we could have easily have said, hey, Sam, would you mind slipping social impact into your portfolio? Or, hey, Karen, I know you're kind of trying to be in charge of this, but would you mind doing events and community too? Doesn't work. You need to go, that person's job is that.
Yeah.
Because then they can throw all their passion and energy and creativity at it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that has been a shift for me as well as we've done that is where my energy gets taken up. So for a while, I was taking on a new portfolio of projects, and it's like, oh, this is great. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Because our team was quite small. And as that team's grown, that focus of energy means you can't do all of these projects at the same time, as well as manage the growth in the team. Mm. So you then have to kind of plan better, but also lay things out and go, well, that has to wait until next year, or we need to bring a body in to actually do that thing, as opposed to trying to squeeze it into everything else we're doing as well.
Yeah.
This feels like we're sort of coming to the end of our conversation, and I sort of wonder, sort of, what is there a key takeaway for you from this year that you might want to share?
Well, at one level, it's very practical, which is the shift to virtual. And as a reflection of the fact we already wanted to do that, but we didn't, because we were trapped in our ways of thinking in person, because we had that Chinese meal and we were like, we should go virtual, and then we didn't, and then our hand was forced. And you said in our last conversation like this, it's curious that your hand, you know, one's hand has to be forced. So at one level, it's like, okay, so what do we really want to do that we're not moving into because our hand hasn't been forced.
Mm.
So that's one kind of takeaway. It's just like the virtual shift is more like a representation of what's possible that we don't do for whatever reason. And then I think the second one is just really this kind of sense of like, A, the out of controlness of so much of what's around us, but B, our ability to respond to it. And it's given me a much greater sense of trust in the team. Because if you know, bear in mind, I only stepped away from the team like mid 2018, came back in 2018 and really stepped away a bit again at the start of this year. So it hasn't been long that you've been really heading up. And yet, so this is why I kind of think of this year as a bit of a crucible for you, because it's really forged you in the fire of challenge. And it's enabled me to go, wow, you know, Rob's got this. And that's been great. So that's my, you know, two big takeaways is one is like, what are we not stepping into that we could do? And two is that it's really built the trust in the system and in the team and in you.
Yeah, I think my key is team. I think that I really... You know, for a long time, we've always, but you talk about, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, and we kind of throw that around as something. I think this year, especially the last 6 months, I've really gone, you know, the team is so crucial. And as you start to build that team, you know, to think carefully about what's the next ingredient you're bringing into the team and how you need to stand by that ingredient as the ripples of change kind of go through the system because you've brought something new into that space. And I guess it's, for me, it's like, how do I support that team, but also how do I empower that team as well? So it's all really kind of hooked on team for me.
That's really nice. I really like that. And I think you're thinking of the team in a slightly different perspective than I am when you say that, because for me, what's also come from this is my pride in knowing that not I as a human being, but I as a creator of Animas and the system that's then grown from it, how we've supported people through this difficult year. Like I feel really, really proud and happy that the Philippines team have all maintained. It would be so, a lot of employers would go like, where can I cut costs? Philippines, doesn't matter. And I never have to meet them. So I can do that with a cold heart. That happens a lot in business, and I feel so proud that we haven't done that to anyone. We've supported them and the livelihoods that it means to them, the families, the hardships some of them have gone through. That's the thing that that's also the thing I'm most proud of. I'll be honest, like knowing that the team is still in place, that feels great to me. It's an amazing feeling that so many people have got through this year because of Animas.
It's pretty interesting as you say that. I got a message today from somebody's family member, so they're not connected to Animas. It was a family member who just sent me a message saying, just want to thank you as a team for supporting my partner who's been working with you during this time. And it kind of really made me go, yeah, we've done a good job around that, especially as I look at other organizations and other friends who haven't been supported by their companies. And,
exactly.
You know, people have just let them go because it's the easy thing to do. And we've kind of really worked hard at keeping people with us as we've kind of gone through this time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very proud thing for me. So thanks for being part of it, Rob. I mean, obviously, you know, you've been critical in this year, so thank you.
Okay, so it's been a real, real pleasure having this conversation with you, Nick. I wish you a wonderful Christmas, winter, seasonal holiday, and look forward to catching up with you again in the new year.
You too. Thanks very much, Rob. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
If you'd like to watch these episodes as well as listen, you can find the video interviews on our YouTube channel and website now. Thanks for tuning in to Coaching Uncaged. Join us again for more captivating conversations, exploring the art of coaching.